Hello, and welcome to IEP Essentials Pro Tips Podcast, brought to you by Learning Essentials. Learning Essentials offers special education-based tutoring in your home by state-certified educators with advanced degrees in all areas of special education. IEP Essentials Pro Tips Podcast brings professionals together to educate and empower families navigating special education needs in the IEP process.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for our IEP Essentials Pro Tips Podcast. Our episode today will focus on assistive technology. I'm your host, Wendy Taylor. Today we are chatting with Joan Green. Joan is a speech-language pathologist. She is ASHA certified and licensed in Maryland, Virginia, and D.C. Joan is the owner of Innovative Speech Therapy. Her fourth book, Assistive Technology in Special Education, Third Edition, Resources to Support Literacy, Communication, and Learning Differences, is available on Amazon as well as other online sites. Joan received her formal training at Northwestern University and has provided forward-thinking speech therapy services ever since. Joan has received several awards for her unique approach to helping others and is actively involved with many local, online, and international groups and associations. Hi, Joan. Thank you for joining us.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you bet. I'm excited. Today, we're talking about assistive technology with a special education lens and having a conversation on how assistive technology can level the playing field for our learners. So let's get started. What is assistive technology?
Well, it really depends on how formal you want to get. The formal definition of assistive technology is that it's any item, piece of equipment, software program, or product system that's used to increase, maintain, or improve the functional capabilities of people with disabilities. However, I think of it as all sorts of technologies can make life easier. It turns into assistive technology when without it, a person can't do a task. So, you know, we can think that a lot of people, when they're thinking of assistive technology, they might think of these high-tech computers, touch screens, adaptive switches, screen readers, head trackers, but it all, you know, in the world of education. But it could be something just very simple that everybody uses, like a keyboard, that it becomes assistive technology when without it, a person can't show what they know. Does that make sense?
It absolutely does. And I think that answers my next question of why is it important for school-age students to have it? And really that is to level that playing field so that students can demonstrate their knowledge just as their same age peers as well. And so how will assistive technology help my child learn more successfully? So we know that it can help support all of us globally, and we know that it can really provide that equal opportunity for students that have a variety of needs to be able to level that playing field and really go and show using their cognition and able to show what they know. But how can that help my child learn more successfully? How is that going to help?
Well, I think that the whole point of assistive technology is it helps get rid of whatever barriers your child might be having. And for each child, that might be different. So I think of assistive technology as helping in three broad categories. The first is helping the child access information, you know, get the inputs that they need, whether it be, you know, reading materials, listening and understanding what people are saying to them, interpreting visual, you know, things that are written on a whiteboard or something. So the inputs, so it helps everybody better access input, like information being given to them. And then the second piece is their ability to understand and process and engage with whatever's going on in the classroom or at home. And the third piece is being able to show what they know or communicate what they've learned, you know, the output piece. So the input, the engagement, and the output. And every individual has different strengths and weaknesses in each of those areas. And if we can use technology to get rid of or minimize the barriers and help people take advantage of their strengths, that sets them up for success.
Right. And doesn't that set all of us up for success, right?
Absolutely.
Highlight our strengths and grow any other areas. But that's such a great way to put it in terms of looking at understanding, accessing that information, input versus output. With that input versus output and showing what we know, I think that kind of leads us to that next question of, will it help my child become a more independent learner?
I believe that it does. So a lot of parents might be hesitant to use assistive technology because they think it will become a crutch, or they think that then the system won't try to teach them particular skills that they should be developing. I don't think that's true. I think that it just makes learning these different skills more likely to happen. So, for example, if we're talking about reading, a lot of students might learn to read with more difficulty than others. And so, as they're improving their skill of reading, shouldn't we lower the barrier of helping them access certain information through other means? So, I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, but I think that it will help them become more independent, because in this whole process of figuring out what tools students need to become better learners, they increase their awareness of how their brain works and what they need in order to succeed. And so we start working way at the beginning on building self-advocacy skills so that they can feel more in control. And in turn, that often reduces stress. And it helps kids become more resilient throughout life instead of, you know, doing everything for them and then they become dependent on others for that assistance. We want to really strengthen their independence and self-confidence.
Absolutely. And that kind of even goes to what one of our topics before about vision statements and taking our young students and looking at, you know, what are their skills now? What can we put into place to better support the growing of those skills so that they can be independent and then they can take that off into adulthood with that independence and with that advocacy component? And it's so empowering to be able to provide that for a student.
Right, right. I mean, and we're just helping them learn how their brain works. And I really think that a lot of students become dependent, you know, on someone else to take notes for them, or someone else to read a book to them, or someone else to pave their way so that they don't fail, you know, instead of trying to build up the supports along the way that they can become increasingly independent with.
And now with technology, there's so many options. I mean, it's really endless, isn't it, in terms of what we can provide our students with so that they don't have to rely on others, that they can really truly be the most independent that they're able to become.
Absolutely. It's become really great. I mean, now I would say in most classrooms, there are computers, there are tablets, there are all kinds of tools to help students learn. But I think that there are so many choices now that it's become overwhelming. And therapists and teachers and parents have gotten pulled in so many different directions that sometimes becomes a barrier because they don't know what's best and they don't know what to use. When I'm working with people, I tend to try to stick with built-in accessibility features that are already included and free on the devices that the students are already using. So keeping things simple. And one huge barrier has always been that students naturally don't want to feel different or ostracized. Years ago, when I used to advocate for students to be able to have access to a keyboard to type and show what they know, I would hit lots of resistance. But now in the age of Chromebooks and Microsoft learning tools, and a lot of schools have really embraced technology, these students become more tech savvy and can become empowered to help other students learn about these cool features on their devices that the others didn't even know existed. And, you know, a lot of kids are wearing headphones and no one knows if you're listening to text read aloud or listening to music, you know, to help with focus.
100%. So I see that in the classroom often where I've gone in and observed and supported, and it just seems such commonplace. But you do see the students get excited to share these really cool aspects of their device, but the devices are common for all of the students. So it really doesn't make them stand out at all. So that is really neat to see and really empowering for the students. In your path and what you've seen, what are some common uses of assistive technology for students that have learning disabilities? You kind of hit on a couple of them, but what do you normally or typically see? I know that it's such a broad range.
Yeah, it's a broad range, but I do find myself doing some of the same things over and over again. You know, I offer free webinars and I tend to hit those areas a lot in the free webinars that I do because parents just don't realize that they exist. I would say the three most common assistive technology features that I almost always start with are the first one is almost always text to speech. So having things read aloud. So I start with empowering families. I work directly with the families, so I'm not affiliated with any particular school system. So when I always try to have parents or tutors or therapists with me when I'm working with the student, and the first thing we look at is how to make all of their devices read out loud to them. And so we'll sit there, and sometimes siblings come too, and we just enable this feature on all the different devices. The second feature, so I talk in terms of features because it can look different on different devices, how it's actually done. The second feature that's now included for free on all newish devices are the ability to say something and have the words typed out. So speech to text or dictation has really improved quite a lot and is free. And the third one is using a calendar and some sort of reminder and to-do app or feature to help somebody break big tasks down into little tasks and organize their time. Those three areas of focus are helpful for everybody, not just students with disabilities, but students with, you know, differences in learning and communication need them to succeed often.
And how often do we, just in our normal day, use that dictation on, you know, our smartphones and our calendar reminders? And so that access is really fantastic for all of us, really.
And right. And often the parents love this stuff and they end up wanting a session just to get better at it themselves because it's good for productivity and executive functioning. We all have times when we might have trouble understanding written material, and we do better when we can hear it and see the words highlighted at the same time, or we hurt our hand or our elbow, or we're working on a device that's really small and we just want to touch a microphone and have it type out what we say. It's great for everybody. And so in my mind, these features should always be available to all students to be able to access information and show what they know.
And it is. And just like you said, in this day of Chromebooks, and you know, a lot of schools have, you know, either a bring your own device policy or Chromebooks accessible, that teaching them that they can go in and do this on their device really doesn't make them stand out at all. What should we expect when assistive technology is considered? And kind of with that, what professionals are even qualified to assess the tools or the device?
It's a really tricky question because you don't have to be licensed as an assistive technology specialist. In fact, I'm not. I don't have a particular credential. I just call myself a technology specialist. I'm a speech language pathologist, and that's where my license and credentialing is. So sometimes they're special educators, sometimes we're occupational therapists, speech pathologists. There's no particular license. I think that it really depends on what type of setting you're in. So I know I'm in Montgomery County Public Schools, are where my kids all went to school, and they have a team of professionals that are used as the assistive technology specialists. And when it's set up there so that when teachers feel that a student might benefit from assistive technology, they can reach out to those specialists for support. But those specialists don't work typically directly with the student. It's really up to the teacher, and I know it's brought into the IEP process to determine by the team of educators which assistive technology features will best help the student. It's really tricky because in my experience, I go into a lot of private schools, I go into a lot of homeschooling situations, And it's very difficult to keep up with all of this because it keeps changing and it becomes overwhelming. And a lot of it's really hard when you've got a paper-based classroom to switch over and have the student readily accept these tools if others aren't using them. So it's a difficult process. It's not as easy as they make it sound.
You mentioned IEPs and talking about assistive technology and looking at the criteria for assistive devices and looking at the special instructional factors, the child's profile, the present level of academic achievement and functional performance, and looking at our goals and our objectives for that student, and looking at state and district testing. You know, is that AT assistive technology to be used? And is it allowable as an accommodation for that state and district testing? So looking at, you know, if they're using an assistive device in the classroom, how does that look for those state and district testing and how does that measure? So if you're able to be in the classroom using these devices, but you're not able to use them on the state and district testing, trying to find that balance. Do you have any insight on that?
It's a big problem. I don't have too much special insight and advice, but I do know that I've come across some school districts where the assistive technology supports that are available in the classroom are not the same supports that are acceptable in a testing situation. And I think that's awful. There's a lot of room for improvement and advocacy in this area. It's a new area, and these technologies just keep changing. And so it's a huge problem. You know, on some global level, there are a lot of people who think that everybody should just always have access to text-to-speech and speech-to-text, period. As a society, we're communicating in different ways, and we have these different ways to show what we know and to access information. Why should we place these barriers in a testing situation? They should just always be available. And I think that things are moving that way because it's a neurodiverse population. I mean, there are students that have sensory issues, that have learning issues, that have all kinds of issues, and everything's on a spectrum. And in society, to help people succeed, why can't they just use these tools all the time?
Exactly. And that makes the most sense. And you really want kind of back to that IEP and that documentation, you really want to illustrate the assistive technology is a tool to support that achievement of goals and the progress in the general ed curriculum. And you also have to establish that clear relationship between what the student needs, the assistive technology device, and the services. And on top of that, aligning everything, the goals and objectives. So that is the intent. And it really does become layered in that sense because there's a lot of players. And like you said, it's an ever-growing field. So it doesn't preclude the development of additional goals, but we really want it to be aligned so that the appropriate use of assistive technology really aligns with the students' needs, the input and output that they're able to show, and that's aligned with what is expected of them.
Right. Absolutely. This concept of neurodiversity and inclusion is really taking off, you know, and there are people with chronic fatigue syndrome. I mean, all kinds of, this is your area. I mean, all kinds of medical issues that might not be a documented learning disability, but maybe somebody with headaches or somebody with vision sensitivities. I mean, there are all kinds of issues out there where people of all ages can benefit from these tools. And so I think they're just as many people benefit from wider doorways and the cutout curb in case you are pushing a stroller or you have, you know, automatic doors are helpful for not only people in wheelchairs, but for a person who's able to walk normally and carrying a lot of groceries. You know, I mean, universal design. And I believe that everybody should have access. Now, on the flip side, we want kids to improve their ability to read and write in a conventional sense. I mean, you want to be able to read books, paper books. I mean, well, some people might say, why, you don't have to. You can always have things read aloud to you. But I do think that it's good to work on the skills of reading and decoding. And so I think that the school system just has to be mindful of what is being tested. Are you testing somebody's ability to decode written words? Then you don't want things read aloud to them because you're bypassing it. Or do you want someone to be able to analyze written content? Then it shouldn't matter how they access the information and learn from it.
Yeah, it's that nice to know or need to know and really being thoughtful in that conversation and that approach. And you really kind of just hit on, you know, what parents will say or educators have said, and I'm sure to you as well, you know, what about skill development? You know, how does assistive technology grow the skill development of my child, or how does it hinder the skill development? And should we be concerned? You know, if we are doing assistive technology for our input and output and to support and level that playing field, what about the skill development that we are leveling the playing field for?
Right. So you're saying the actual reading skills and the actual writing skills. I think we just have to keep that in mind. And the assistive technology is there, but people have to learn how to use it. And it's really up to the educators. The educators still have to teach and have their goals of improving the areas that they're working on. The assistive technology it's just a tool. It's all in how you use it. It's not inherently good or bad. It's just when it's used and how it's used to level that playing field. But I think that, you know, if you think of the way that our society is going, there's so much information. We have information overload now. So we have to improve skills using the technology. So even if we can have, you know, all of this content read aloud to us, you still have to make sense of it and analyze it and know what to believe as truth or fiction.
To process it, right? You know, that's exactly right. With all of this information, how are we critically diving deep in the information that we're given so that we can make a decision based upon that? So you're really looking at the educational skills, but then being able to grow those skills. And I like how you said, you know, assistive technology is a tool to support it, but it's not the end all with it, right? So you still need to be able to have those skills to be able to actively engage in the classroom and to be actively engaged in the workforce.
Right. And using the technology that's available today brings with it new problems, right? So you have to be able to control what you pay attention to. So if you're on a computer, you can very easily navigate away from what you're supposed to be doing and watch YouTube videos or something. Or, you know, I mean, it's a problem. And we hear in the media all the time about all the problems that are worsening, you know, bullying, you know, all this digital citizenship stuff. Like, we have to teach proper use of technology. And, you know, so with access to this technology does come a whole host of problems, but also there are a lot of people that without it would never be able to actively participate in society the way that they will be able to because of the technology. So there are a lot of new issues to consider. I think a lot of parents really wish they could just throw technology out the door because it leads to so many challenges. But I think that if they learn how to help their kids use it mindfully and with intention and not let it be a substitute for social interaction and exercise and being out with nature. I mean, my favorite thing is when I go out and walk the dogs and I see kids playing and running around and talking to each other. I hate it when I see a mom texting while pushing the stroller, not interacting with a baby and teaching them language. As a society, we have to really think about how we're using this technology to better ourselves and others and not succumbing to the potential problems that it could cause if you're not intentional with how you're using it.
And I laugh at that. In my head, I was thinking, you know, I often tell my own kids, I have three boys, I often tell them, you know, get off devices, go be human, get outside. So I understand what you're saying. And so we talked really kind of woven a lot of different directions in this conversation, Joan, and it's fascinating. And really, you know, you've written books on it and done so much, and there's just so much information out there about assistive technology. And so the kind of the scope was using it in the classroom, but how do students from the educational lens use assistive technology in the home? You know, so they've been in class all day, they've used speech to text, they've used the assistive technology devices that are provided to them. What would be kind of your advice or lead to that you share with parents about using those when they come home? Because oftentimes they have homework. So what are we transitioning those skills with?
Well, they can use the same tools at home to do their homework. So if they're signed in, you know, a lot of the Google, is that what you're getting at? Like, which of these tools can they use at home to help also?
Right,
or do they stay within the school?
Benefit, Well, right. So sometimes they stay within the school, but now our device is really, you know, online and Google Classroom, and you have all your assignments and you can turn assignments in. So that really is a wonderful aspect for all of the students. Have you recommended assistive technology for families to use at home that they've then be able to integrate into the classroom or reverse?
Absolutely. I mean, I tend to go with the free, readily available features on the devices that we all already have. So anybody with a PC or a Chromebook or a Mac can use the Chrome browser to log into Chrome and have access to all of the different extensions or features that are available to the kids at school. So a lot of parents don't realize, like, if kids are using Google Classroom and they have, let's say, Read and Write for Google, it's a Chrome extension, the student at home can just log into any computer with their username and ID, and it looks the exact same as it looked in school with all the same supports. The same holds true with Microsoft 365, or, you know, Microsoft now has a Classroom version too. They're really great learning tools that if you're using Microsoft Edge, which is the new browser in the Windows world, that has great speech-to-text and text-to-speech. The one tool that I tend to use a lot is Google Keep. You can use it with the Chrome browser, or if you have an iPhone or an Android phone or any kind of tablet, you just download the Google Keep app. And that's sort of a to-do list, where often what I'll advise students to do is just make a quick little list of things that you need to do after school. So maybe you have a snack, you want to go out and play, you need to do math, and maybe it'll take 20 minutes, and you need to study your spelling, and maybe that'll take 15 minutes. You know, you don't rewrite all the assignments, and then you can reorder the assignments. You can share that note with somebody else and they can see you as you're making your progress. You can color code the notes and then you can check them off as you do things. That's just a really quick to-do that a lot of people find really helpful, and it's free. Another really cool thing that's free is in Google Docs. You can just go to the tools menu and click tools and voice typing and just dictate. And even if you don't have speakers or a microphone on an old desktop that you might have at home, you can pick up your phone and open up the Google Doc app and use that microphone and the keyboard, and you'll see the words instantly showing up on the screen of your desktop computer because they're synced in real time. So it's all the same tools typically that I most often use in the classroom can be used at home also.
And just having that education piece and that aha moment of teaching family and even teaching students and educators, you know, these are free on the computer. This is where you are on the device. This is how you can access them. Really opens up a whole new world.
Right. And things like the reading aloud of the text, even if you don't have a problem with reading, it's good for everybody because you can proofread your written work and listen to what you wrote and make sure that it's what you were trying to say. And that's free. You know, so it's really good practice for all students to learn how to use these accessibility features that are on their devices or these extensions to our browsers that you can add. But it does become a little bit overwhelming, you know, how to do it. And so what I always say is, you just have to know that it exists. And by listening to this podcast, hopefully people are learning that there are these tools that they didn't know before that exist. And then as parents, you want to be comfortable using them. And so you can just go on YouTube and you can just say, how can I use my Microsoft Surface Pro to dictate text? Or how can I use my Mac to read text aloud to me? You know, how can I access the text-to-speech feature? And so just knowing that this all exists is the first step. And then you can learn how to actually use it or ask your kids, you know, and it's a great parenting activity or family activity. The kids might be ahead of the parents on this, and together you can figure it out as a team. And that's really great. I mean, that's something that can empower the kids to feel really good about these new skills. And it's not a crutch for a disability. It's being tech savvy and smart to learn how to do something more efficiently with more success.
That's right. And to show the family and siblings and parents for sure. So Joan, a couple of things. I want to hear your final thoughts on this. And then would you mind, after your final thoughts, to share where folks, you mentioned you have these lovely free webinars that can help support parents and how they can access that information.
Sure. So my final thoughts about ATU just AT, assistive technology, I would just encourage people to explore what's possible. It's all about feature matching. There's no exact right or wrong way to explore how assistive technology can work. It should be an inclusive, collaborative approach with the family, the student, and the educators, using resources most typically that are readily available to find ways to make life easier and overcome barriers for everybody. My website is innovativespeech.com. And I have links to webinars that I give. I'm on Facebook. I have an Innovative Speech Therapy Facebook page. I have a Facebook group. Another website I have is theymaynotknow.com. And that's where I list the free webinars. And I do record all the webinars. And then I house them in a membership site that's $25 a month so that you can watch the previous recordings. But if you sign up to watch them live or within a week after the webinar, it's free. It's an exciting time for people with different kinds of learning and communication challenges, because it used to be that all of these tools were so expensive. I remember spending $500 for a touchscreen, and now it's just included on our phones. You know, so although technology has a lot of problems that it can cause, it's very exciting. And I'm now getting into how to use all of the artificial intelligence, you know, Siri and Alexa and Bixby on the Samsung devices. All of these tools are really meeting the needs of diverse learners and making life much easier. But it's a little tricky to figure it out at first, but very much worth the effort.
Well, it's been such a pleasure. And I love that, you know, let's explore what is possible to overcome these barriers so that we can be the best versions and our students can be the best versions of themselves and really truly shine in that academic realm and outside in the world as well. And that's what we hope for all of our students, to make it a great day and to really overcome these barriers and really just be who they are and comfortable and confident in their learning. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to connect, especially with the resources on your site that you shared. You can really reach such a population, and I hope families take a look at them and make it a good day for their kids.
Oh, there's one more thing I forgot to mention. Every day I offer spots on a calendar for free 15-minute consultations. And it's my pleasure to do this. I talk to families from all over the world and help them figure out their next steps. So if you do end up going to innovativespeech.com, my website, there's a little pop-up and it says, let's chat. And almost every day I do two or three of these. I only open up the slots a couple of days in advance, but it's just to help families figure out what to. It's not an assessment or an evaluation. It's just a little bit of brainstorming on the phone to determine where to look next after I get a quick take about what's going on. So everyone that hears this podcast is welcome to partake in that.
Well, thank you. Have a great day, and I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today for our IEP Essentials Pro Tips podcast. To hear more pro tips and find additional IEP essentials, including our IEP webinar, please visit www.learningessentialsedu.com.